This is For the Record. 40 years ago this month, North Vietnamese troops captured Saigon. The long war in Vietnam was coming to an end.
The communist forces are now almost at the gates of the capital. The new president here...
In the midst of the political fallout, the U.S. government announced an unusual plan to get thousands of displaced Vietnamese children out of the country. Here's President Gerald Ford on April 3, 1975.
I have directed that money from a $2 million special foreign aid children's fund be made available to fly 2,000 South Vietnamese orphans to the United States as soon as possible.
It came to be known as Operation Baby Lift. The very first plane to leave as part of that mission took off on April 4th, 1975, just a few weeks before the fall of Saigon and the end of the Vietnam War. For the record today, looking back at Operation Baby Lift. We're going to hear from some of the people who were on that first flight. Colonel Bud Traynor was the pilot.
Real name is Dennis, but I'm Dennis the Third, so I ended up Little Buddy, and that stuck for the rest of my life. And at the time, I was a captain.
And Colonel Regina Owney, the flight's chief medical officer.
I was a first lieutenant, just barely in the Air Force 2 years, just beginning to learn what it really meant to be, you know, a military officer and be involved in military operations. I will never forget that day. It's as fresh to me right now as it was the day it happened.
Bud Traynor was used to flying cargo around the Pacific in C-5 planes. He remembers when he first heard about this very different mission.
I got a call from the 22nd Command Post. Hey, we want you to take the cargo in, and when you get there, we want you to bring out a load of people. Okay, C-5s don't really carry people. It's a cargo airplane. And so they said, well, how many people can you take? And I said, well, I have 73 seats. No, no, no. How many can you really take?
The passengers in question were children, hundreds of them, many under the age of 2. The C-5 is an enormous airplane with 2 levels, a cavernous cargo compartment below. Above it, the flight deck and troop compartment where those 73 seats were. Most of the kids were too little to walk. They had to be carried onto the plane, handed over from one crew member to another.
We bucket brigade loaded the children right up the stairs into the airplane.
And I did a quick nurse's assessment of the children and then handed them to the crew member next to me. And hand over hand, we got these children in the troop compartment till the troop compartment was filled. We decided that because the children were so small that we would put 2 children to a seat. And we took all the armrests out of the seats. So there's 3 seats across on either side of the aisle. So we put 6 children in 3 seats.
But there wasn't enough room for all the kids in that troop compartment, so the others were taken to the cargo area.
We put them in little groups, and we secured them to the floor of the aircraft with cargo tie-down straps and litter straps and blankets and pillows and whatever we could to kind of secure them to the floor.
Dozens of civilian women came on board, too, to take care of the children. Most of them stayed down below. The trouble began only minutes after takeoff. There was a rapid decompression inside the aircraft.
The cockpit filled with condensation, and you know, poof, and you know instantly what it is.
At that moment, Regina Owney was above the cargo hold. She heard a bang.
When the fog cleared, I looked down through the grate that I had been kneeling on and saw that the back end of the aircraft was gone. I saw the South China Sea.
The locks on the giant cargo doors at the back of the plane had failed. The doors blew out, taking with them a chunk of the tail.
It cut all control cables to the tail. So I'm pulling and pulling and pulling, and my nose is going down further and further, and we're going faster and faster and faster, and I can't figure this out.
Bud Traynor managed to stabilize the plane and turn it back toward Vietnam. After that, his only option was a crash landing. The impact was fierce.
I ended up sailing all the way down the troop compartment aisle, banging into the seats, and could feel the bones in my foot breaking and crashed into all the the edges of the seat and those kinds of things as I went from one end of the troop compartment to the other.
That's when I said, you know, goodbye to my wife, and I thought I was gone then.
I remember thinking, this plane is crashing and I am going to live through it. And I have to figure out how to take care of everybody once we finally come to a complete stop.
We came to a stop and I thought to myself, I'm alive. And so I undid my lap belt, fell to the ceiling, rolled open the side window and stepped out and saw the wings burning. And I thought, oh no, that's the rest of the airplane.
The plane went down in a rice paddy just a couple miles from Saigon, but the aircraft had split apart. The cargo compartment carrying children, civilians, and crew members was crushed, but the troop compartment was largely intact. Regina Auney didn't have time to think about her injuries. She and the other crew members who survived started carrying the children off what was left of the plane. Help did come quickly, helicopters to evacuate the survivors.
176 lived and 138 died. Mm-hmm. So we're on the plus side of luck there. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, those people who were downstairs didn't have much of a chance.
Bud Traynor and Regina Auney were honored by the military for their actions that day. They both stayed in the Air Force, built careers and families. Still, each felt pulled back to April 4th, 1975, craving some kind of connection to the other survivors.
There was no mechanism for anybody to find me, let alone me find them. The kids had a name when they left, and then they got a new name when they went to their adoptive families. So there was no tracking for me.
I read everything I could possibly read and tried to find everything I could possibly find that mentioned Operation Baby Lift or even the C-5 crash. I always wondered what happened to all the children and, you know, how their lives were progressing, but I had no real way of finding them.
My name is Erin Lockhart, and I was born in Vinh Long, Vietnam, and raised primarily in Northern Virginia.
Erin Lockhart, as you may have guessed, was one of the children on that plane. At least that's what she believes. It's impossible to prove because there was no passenger manifest. From an early age, her adoptive parents told her as much as they knew about where she came from and her presence on that flight. But those conversations only triggered more questions. Lockhart combed through all kinds of documents and news articles, and eventually,
I was able to find an article about Regina Auney.
Regina Auney, who at that point was stationed in Charleston, South Carolina. More than 20 years after that plane crash, her phone rang. It was a woman named Erin Lockhart.
And then she told me who she was, and it was just overwhelming. I was just speechless. And I remember thinking, I must have held Erin in my arms because every single one of those babies that was upstairs, I had held in my arms for just a fleeting minute. But if Erin was upstairs, then I held her. And now she's talking to me as an adult. It's hard to explain how overwhelming that was for me.
Bud Traynor was looking to make his own connections. With social media, he saw his chance. He started a Facebook group for survivors of the C-5 crash. It wasn't long before more than 200 survivors and family members had joined the group and organized a reunion.
Those were actually people on my plane, and so I get to meet them, all grown up, and they've got kids of their own, the same age, and so there's a great feeling of camaraderie, I guess, and an extended family of sorts.
Regina Auney and Erin Lockhart have been to those reunions, too. For Erin, it's helped her fill in the blank spaces of her own past.
Most people take for granted how their past sort of fit together. And this is just their past, and this is their information, and it is all very clear. When you have nothing but holes and gray and uncertainty about your history, it's a challenge.
Regina Auney didn't just fill in the gaps of that one day in 1975 for Erin Lockhart. Their lives became intertwined after that very first phone call. They even traveled together to Vietnam and returned to the crash site. Regina Auney says Erin Lockhart has become part of her family.
It's hard to imagine that she wasn't in my life at some point because she is so much a part of it now.
Reconnecting with her and other survivors at reunion events has helped Regina move past some of the trauma of that day.
When I listen to them talk about their stories, and believe me, they're not all Cinderella stories, what I sensed was their gratitude, their gratefulness for being alive and for being given the opportunities they were given. And so that helped temper some of that sadness and sorrow and grief. So I look at it, I don't want to say in a more positive way, but in a way in which I can see that those who died in the crash did not die in vain. Let's put it that way, that out of it came new life. Maybe not the way we wanted it to, maybe not the way we thought it should have, but hope came out of that. But I don't want to forget what the cost was.
That was Colonel Regina Auney, Aaron Lockhart, and Colonel Bud Trainer reflecting on Operation Babylift 40 years ago. We've got photos of that crash on our website. I'm clicking through them now. They're pretty amazing. You can see the photos at npr.org.